Blog Talk Radio.
Women and hair.
Some of us don't have to worry about that.
Okay, here we go. All righty, here we go. All right. Hi, this is Ann McNeil, the Master Builder, helping you to build a stronger and better life and business. Very excited again to be hosting My Investing Story with Ione McNeil. The desire in hosting this show every week is to encourage us in the fact that everybody, yes, that's you too, everybody has an investing story. And so as volunteers with the National Association of Investment Corporation, better known as Better Investing, we are only volunteers. We do this from the goodness of our heart. We don't get paid. We're not financial advisors. And so we want to just make sure that you understand that this information is for educational purposes only. As volunteers, to share with you a little about the organization, Better Investing was established in 1951 as a 501c3 not-for-profit organization. It has helped over 5 million people learn how to invest. And we do that through our investment club and our stock selection and investment education materials. And so I want to welcome my co-host, Ms. Ione McNeil. How are you this evening, Ione? And you're on mute, Ione.
Hello, I'm doing well.
Awesome. Well, we're very excited tonight to have someone that's very special, and we have in common Mr. Bob Wynn. And I think that most of us that end up on this show have Bob Wynn in common. So I think that says and speaks a lot about Bob. But let's talk a little bit about our special guest tonight. So good evening, Joe Knight. How are you this evening?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you. I'm going to turn this part of the show over to Ione, but I just want to say we had some conversation prior to the show, and Ione's been talking to you in prep for the show. And so we are all in agreement that this is going to be one of the most exciting shows because of who you are and your point and story.
We'll keep our fingers crossed.
All right. So everybody has an investment story. We just want to encourage you to sit tight. Get your pen and pad if you choose. But just enjoy the information as I turn the program over to Ione. All right, Ione.
Thank you. So I guess one question I didn't get to ask or I don't know yet is, are you retired yet, Mr. Knight?
I've never really worked, Ione, so I've never had to stop working by saying that I've retired. So technically, some people still pay me, so I guess I'm still working, but I do it on my terms, so maybe
okay.
I'm retired.
Cool. So could you talk to us a little bit about your journey of becoming a lawyer, and how did you even come into knowing about investing for the first time?
That's a really long sort of story, and so I hope you'll bear with me. I think, like most people, and I knew nothing about investments. I think there are very few people who grow up in families where they talk about investments or they give children their portfolios or part of a portfolio to manage. I had none of that. My parents were working class laborers. My mother was a domestic and a cook, and my father was a laborer who worked in the recreation department after having been a coal miner for a number of years. And when I grew up in North Carolina, even though I was born in West Virginia, my father dealt with the economy and economic turmoil because when I was born, the country was changing from coal to oil. And by changing from coal to oil, there were no jobs for coal miners. So my father left West Virginia and moved to North Carolina, where he was from, and began a lifelong journey. And I can recall one of the earliest times dealing with my parents was recognizing the importance of saving and the difficulty of getting in debt. And I'll say this by saying that when my sister was born, my younger sister was born, the four of us lived in one room, in a rented room, if you can imagine that, of a house, the four of us. My father at that point worked three jobs in order to keep food on the table and to keep us there, and they continued to try and make their efforts to, again, to make ends meet, as most of us do. As it turns out, my mother wanted some things, and she and my dad ultimately used some credit cards. And I can recall them finding themselves into what I would say is a modest amount of debt these days, but for them was an extraordinary amount of debt. And this must have been, this was after they had tried to run gone into business and tried to run a grill, and that wasn't very successful. So they had this debt, and they had to figure out a way to get out of it. And the way they did it was to work extra jobs, to save every penny they could, and eventually get to the point of being able to buy their first home. And I remember that they bought the first home, and it was a terribly built home. And after about 4 or 5 years there, we moved to a second home. And that second home, I must have been maybe 13, and they spent $14,700 for that house. They had a $102 a month mortgage, which sounds like nothing these days. But in the late 60s, the mid and late 60s, that was an extraordinary amount of money. So I have always learned from my parents that you have to work hard. You got to hustle for every penny that you get. So when I was in high school, I shouldn't say this even to this day, but it is the truth. I lied about my age, and I got a job as a cleaning technician for a hospital doing respiratory therapy in that department. And I saved every penny because my parents had always stressed that you're going to go to college, not that you, even though they didn't, they were very clear that education was the way out for them. So what I eventually managed to get off and go to college, but this respiratory therapy experience gave me a lot of, again, understanding. I had some money, and my father often had men that he worked with on his crew who would spend all their money on the weekend and come knocking on our door on a Sunday night asking to borrow $50 until the next payday. So my dad said, well, you can learn something here, son. You can lend them money if you want. So I had an extra $50. My father was, the best way to describe it, I say it jokingly, he was a loving loan shark. $50 today, $62.50 on Friday. And you take it or leave it. My dad never had a person who defaulted on him, never someone who stiffed him, because his word was his bond, and he told people that borrowed from him, your words have to be your bond. So if I lend you the money, I'm old. I can't make it so that I'm going to be able to chase you down. So I expect you to be a person of your word. And he never had anyone stiffing. That taught me a lot about, again, having integrity, taught me about being honest and candid with people, and taught me about You know, if you have a little money, you always might have the opportunity to make a little more, but you first have to have a little money. So that's the first lesson, if you will. I went to college thinking I was going to go into business. And I interviewed, because I had this wonderful scholarship, I interviewed a number of schools, and the school that I thought I was going to go to, they said they didn't have a business degree. And they said, well, we have something similar. It's called economics. And I had no clue what economics was. So I said, well, if it's similar to business, I'll do that. And then I decided at the last moment not to go to that school, and I decided to go to the University of North Carolina. When I went to Chapel Hill, they had both a business school and a business curriculum and a business degree and an economics degree. But remember, this is a poor country boy who grew up in a little town, didn't know much, and had no one giving him advice. So I told them at Davidson College, I was going to major in economics. That's what I told them in North Carolina. I'll major in economics, not knowing that no one majored in economics if you were going to go into business. Well, I found economics and I fell in love with it. And by falling in love, again, I began to learn some lessons. So I'm going to stop there because I could take the story and just run with it. But Ione, I know you want to ask other questions, so I'll stop there.
Well, I really appreciate how you started started by talking about the lessons you learned from your parents. These lessons that you picked up, were they observed when you were young, or did it only really occur to you when you look back? Were you, you know, aware of what was going on with the debt situation and with the house situation, the mortgage situation, when you were the age it was happening?
My father and mother were very, very special people, and I miss them dearly. But they were always candid with their son and their daughter. And so they told us when we were struggling. They told us we were struggling. I think that times have changed a little bit. We never used the word poor. But being poor when I was growing up did not mean a character flaw. And today, unfortunately, we've got a lot of people who think that because you have no money or that because you're poor, that you are somehow character flawed. And I never subscribed to that. Some of my favorite times as a little boy was going to the laundromat and helping my mother wash and dry and fold clothes. Little did I realize that going to a laundromat is what poor people do because they can't afford a washer and a dryer. So when we got a house and we finally got a washer and a dryer, there was no more laundromat, I decided I didn't want to fold clothes. But my mother said, yeah, you still got to fold and wash clothes, boy.
Okay, cool. So the next question going off of your original story, was it when you were an economics major that you came into investing? Was it later in college? Was it after college?
It is amazing. The only investing that I did until I finished law school was that little bit of loan sharking investing when I was in high school.
Exactly.
Other than that, it was simply a matter of recognizing that people who have money actually may have more opportunities. And it was also recognizing that there are certain things that people were doing that just did not seem rational to me. And the way I describe it is, you know, I try to think rationally about things. So unfortunately, my father was a cigarette smoker. And my dad at one point smoked 2 to 3 packs of cigarettes a day. And that was a lot. I lived in North Carolina. Cigarettes were cheap. And when I was growing up, that was 25 cents a pack. So you maybe could afford 50 cents a pack. But my thinking was, if you're smoking 2 packs a day, that's $1 a day. If you save that $1 a day for 350 days instead of a whole year, you have $350 in your pocket. So I learned something from my dad, even when he was doing something that wasn't good for his health, that you could make rational choices. So I decided I was never going to become a smoker. And the money that I might use to smoke became some of the money I could put away. So I did that. And the only other thing that I did with respect to investments was realizing, again, the more you accumulate, at some point you'll have a better opportunity. Now, my opportunities tended to be I wanted to travel. So I saved my money to travel. And I didn't travel far or wide, but I did manage to get out of North Carolina to see some other places. And that led me to go to New York City and go to law school at Columbia. And at Columbia in New York City, you've got the capital of finance for the world. You've got a law school experience that was very alienating to me. And I still didn't pay a lot of attention to investing. It was only when I finally left Columbia and actually began the workday world that I began to pay a little bit more attention.
Okay. So before we get into your first time hearing about investing and then even, let's say, investing in stocks or mutual funds, is there a parallel between how you evaluated your clients during your loan shark days and how you evaluate stocks? Were you looking at character? Were you looking at history? How were you making those decisions to loan money to certain people that would come since you had it?
The only people I loaned money to were people that worked with my father. And there's a handful of men that, you know, none of them made a lot of money. But my dad had a family, and he sort of tried to keep his money in his house. And he said, if you want to make a loan, you can make a loan through me to these guys if you want to do that. And those are the only people. And did I know anything about them as borrowers? No. All I knew was that they worked with my father. And I knew what my father had said is you have to be a man of your word or a woman of your word. And to the extent that you borrow money from me and you promise to pay me back, I'm going to expect you to pay me back. So that's all I learned.
Okay. Okay. So let's fast forward to, I don't know, where were you working at a law firm at this time when you first found out about, and who shared this information with you?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You sort of pick and you learn. I went to work for a union labor law firm and because I thought that I wanted to do union labor. And I hated it. I absolutely hated it. And I hated it for a couple or three reasons. One, union labor law firms often ended up engaging in large-scale, long-term employment discrimination lawsuits. Well, when you have an employment discrimination suit, you have years of pretrial sort of battles and discovery. You have time in court, and then you have years after a decision is rendered, even appealing it to get to a final sort of decision, which didn't sit so well with me. And the other thing that sort of kept money in the pocket was really representing unions. And the union that my particular law firm represented was the Health and Hospital Workers of New York City, one of their locals. And after you do, as I like to say, a stolen chicken case, which takes you to arbitration because someone in the kitchen was accused, with a member of the union was accused of stealing a chicken. After you did one or two stolen chicken cases, you don't want to do that anymore. So I looked around, and because I had this degree in economics, which was my first love, I didn't go to law school wanting to be a lawyer. I went to law school, again, this rational sort of thinking. My two best friends, Bob Wynn of one, and another is now a federal judge in Ohio, they both wanted to go to law school. And what they said is they came to me one day with the Wall Street Journal, and they plopped it down, and it was the help wanted, the advertisement side. And in that side, it said economist, doctorate level, 5 years experience, $20,000 to $25,000, because I was going to go to graduate school in economics. And then they showed me lawyers, associates, 0 to 2 years, $25,000. And they said, so you need to tell me you're gonna go to graduate school for 5 years, then you're gonna have to work for five more years, and you're gonna make the same amount I'm gonna make if I go to law school for 3 years. It was a rational choice on my part. You know, I love economics. It has steadied me well throughout my life. But the reality was, I said, time, I might have an opportunity. I'll go to law school. And that's how I got to law school, not because I wanted to be a lawyer. So once I decided I didn't like practicing labor law, I looked around and there were a couple of opportunities at that time in the late 1970s for working for banks. And I chose to go to a relatively large bank but not in New York City. It was in Connecticut. And the reason I chose to go there as opposed to a very large bank, Citibank, in New York, was that Citibank wanted to pigeonhole you and say that you would do consumer lending documentation. And my notion was maybe what I should do is I should go and learn much more about the banking industry. And it was then that I discovered that, you know, there's a lot more to banking than just putting your money in and writing a check.
Well, you bring up a really good point because I think that the only difference between many people that take advantage of their situation versus lament their situation and just kind of stay in it, focusing on the mundane, I just have to do this, I'm just going to go do this, and then I'm going to go home, is curiosity. So mm-hmm. I know we talked a little bit about that, but, you know, to go into a bank as a lawyer, you didn't just go to do your job. You went to learn about that bank, about, you know, what that world was. And to have that kind of curiosity, it opens the door for other opportunities. Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit about how your curiosity has led you on your investing path.
Well, one of the things that if I can emphasize any sort of message to the listeners is I think that great investing, all investing, really requires time, patience, I will say two more P's, perspiration and persistence, and then curiosity. It takes time to learn enough about a company or learn enough about a number of companies that you want to put your money at risk with those companies. It takes patience because you're not going to make money overnight necessarily. It takes perspiration because sometimes you wonder whether continuing to put money on in a consistent fashion is the right thing to do. And so you sweat a little when you got a bill over here and you're still putting money over there, but you have to have that perspiration and persistence to keep doing that. And if you do it all with curiosity, where you really want to learn more, you'll be surprised at what you can learn. And for me, that was what I learned in the bank. I never knew anything about a trust department, but this bank had a trust department. And a trust department is where you have several people who have money who give their money to a bank, and the banker then invests the money. So I learned something about how you look after, as I would say, rich folks' money. I learned something about how bankers make their money in the corporate banking department, where they would underwrite and buy bonds that were used to build roads in Connecticut, which is where I was. How they would buy bonds of the state of Connecticut. I learned a lot about the law and about how banks deal with their deposits. So I learned it from a multitude of different angles. And then it became a possibility for me to have something known as a 401k. And then this just was too good to be true. You mean to tell me if I put money away, the bank is going to put some money away too? Well, how much can I put away? And, you know, how much are you going to put away?
So 100% return.
Thank you. Thank you. If I put up 5% of what I earn, and I'll tell you, I earned $19,000 when I took this job. And if I put up just 5%, 5%, not even $1,000. But the bank's going to put almost $1,000 up. I think that's a pretty good deal. So that's where I began to pay attention and be even more curious about the power of compounding, about the power of where that money goes and how that money gets used. And I'd already seen it in the context of how people with money make money. When you make a commercial loan, people don't have money, and the bank gives them a lot of money because they have this sort of idea. Now, Ione has heard this story before, and I always like to tell people over the course of this conversation, I'll talk about a couple of investment smarts and investment misses. And this was a miss. I worked for the bank, And they asked me to write loan documentation for a $5 million loan to a company that wanted to buy a satellite dish. This is in 78 or 79. And this company was going to broadcast sports 24 hours a day. I thought it was the dumbest thing I'd ever heard or seen. It was called the Extra Sports Programming Network. So I wrote the loan documentation, never paid any attention to that Extra Sports Programming Network. We all know as ESPN. Had I invested a little money in ESPN stock then, I probably would be a lot better off than I am now. So those are the things that you learn, and you have to be curious. And sometimes your curiosity doesn't take you there. That's okay. Just remain curious, and you'll find another opportunity.
Well, that's perfect. We're going to hand it back over to Ms. McNeil before we talk more about success stories that you had.
So I just want to remind everybody, for those who may have joined in a little late, we're very excited. We're very excited to be talking about my investing story with Mr. Knight, Mr. Joe Knight. And we call him right now, he's currently considered a distinguished academic in residence at Seattle University Law School, School of Law. He's been actively involved in legal education throughout his career. He's been on the board of the Law School Council and Association of American Law Schools. We've heard a lot about very distinguished young man. I'll call you Mr. Knight. He earned his undergraduate degrees in economics, speech, and political science from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And then he went on to get his law degree from Columbia in University in New York. But what I'd like for you to do, Mr. Knight, if you can share with our listeners a story you were sharing with me prior to our program starting, because I think it's so vitally important as we talk about investing and investing stories. Millennials, older people, when you're talking about connecting with someone in the spirit of marriage, can you share that story about your daughter and her friend?
I will. I have a daughter, and she is 32 years of age. She is a vice president for a marketing and strategy company in New York City. And when she graduated from college, she moved to Washington, D.C., and she had a number of friends in D.C., especially young women friends. And my daughter is a great entertainer. So she likes to do sort of cooking and have these sort of entertainment parties. So she would invite some of her, and the best way to describe it, her girlfriends over, and they decided that they would talk about, she thought it would be useful to talk about investments. So she actually invited them over and invited someone who was an investment advisor to come and meet with the group and begin to have some conversations. As it turns out, that led to more conversations. And my daughter, Lauren, was very surprised to learn that she had a couple of friends, one who was planning on getting married, who had never had a conversation about finances with her prospective husband or to be husband. And when they had a conversation, they began to realize how much they would be together in debt. And they also began to realize that they had very different views about money, spending, savings, and investing. And as it turns out, perhaps for the better, the couple did not get married. The young lady found someone that seemed to have more of the same sort of investing, savings, and approach to life about money that she had. And she seems to be happily married and probably has been married now for maybe 5 or 6 years. I told you that story, Ms. McNeil, because I think that it's really, my daughter and I had this conversation, it's really important to for young people not to go for the beauty and the glamour, but to understand a little bit more about the depth that's involved. And so some people live, I also have another friend from college who was about to remarry, and she was going to remarry an accountant. And the accountant asked her about money and realized that they had not the same view on money, and he refused to marry her. They both seem to be doing fine, but it's probably the best thing because she really didn't worry about money, and she bought a lot of things on credit. And he, being an accountant, was much more concerned about things balancing out. And I think that not enough of us have those kinds of conversations before we decide that we're going to be committing to each other over a long period of time, a lifetime, I hope. So I think it was a good lesson learned for my daughter. It was a good lesson learned and reminded to me. And perhaps it was a good lesson learned for the people that I'm talking about who will remain nameless.
Well, but in addition to that, I think it's a good lesson learned to the people you're talking to, okay, because the reason we're hosting this My Investing Story is that everybody has an investing story. It's only some of the people willing to take responsibility for that story. And mm-hmm. so we want to open the conversation and really encourage people to, like you're saying, have the conversation early. And also have a conversation with your children. They're not too young to start that conversation. Mm-hmm. We have a 3-year-old granddaughter, and she has piggy banks. You know, piggy banks, and you know, you see the coins you give them. And I think it starts there because when they get to the age where they can tell you what they want you to buy, they understand money. And those habits that we create at a very young age become the habits that they keep as they get older, and those habits are harder to break.
And so, I agree completely.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We're going to go ahead and prepare to wrap up, but what I'd like to do between you and Ione, if you want to have any closing comments, we want to also encourage our listeners, if you have any questions you'd like to ask of our guests, if you could put them in the chat. And also, if you have any comments you'd like to share, if you'd also put those in the chat as we prepare to show to wrap up the show. It's been great. I've learned a lot, and I would like to share with Ione as we close. But you've helped us to understand the power of starting early. And as I think about the story you shared about your mom and your dad, what $100 can do today.
Mm-hmm.
What it did last year. The principle is still the same.
Yeah.
The principle and philosophy is still the same. But are we willing to do the work? I mean, that's really the question. No matter how mm-hmm. old we are or how young we are we willing to do the work like you talked about, putting in time and studying? This is a part of that study, if you will, and what people can learn. So any closing comments?
I actually have some more questions.
Okay.
So you talked about one myth, and one of the reasons I wanted to invite you is because you and I both are actually, I think it's called counselors. We're not advisors because we're not over a certain team with the stock mm-hmm. market game being hosted by Bob Wynn and Asset Builders. But being both counselors, you know, we're bringing certain experience and knowledge that we want the students that are involved and also the advisors that are involved to learn from. So last week you did a wonderful presentation on PE ratios, and we have a lot of people on the call that are beginner investors. I would say the average investing experience is anywhere between a couple months to 2 years. So do you have any words of wisdom or things that they should look out for as they are beginners on their investing journey?
I got lots of them. I got lots of them. The first thing that I think, in addition to having curiosity, is you actually have to start thinking about what your risk tolerance is. And a risk tolerance is, for many of us, we have low risk tolerances. And that means you want to put things in a relatively, or what you would call, a safe investment. And that's why we put money in a bank. And the banks don't even pay us 1% now. Historically, the stock market from 1929 up until 2019 has returned an average of 9% on investments. Every year, some years you have downturns, some years you have like what we had earlier this year, but on average, the stock market returns much more. So the first step is to figure out what your risk tolerance is, and it's not about how much you can afford to lose. It's really about how much you can afford to make yourself an informed investor. And that's what I really want you to think about is how do you become an informed investor? And there are several things that I think you should do. You should keep your eyes and your ears open. You should read. You should learn about the people who are running the companies that you were thinking about investing in. You should think about the products that you use and whether you think they're good products. And if they are good products, then why wouldn't you invest in the company that invests in those, that makes those products? So that's the way you sort of start early. I think that many of us never accumulate a nest egg. And a nest egg, when you first start to work, you want to have enough that you, if something happens, like the plumbing goes out, you could afford to pay it. So you need a little bit of money put aside. Many investment books will tell you you should put as much as you, up to 3 months of readily available money in cash that you could have in a bank or in a money market fund and be able to utilize that for your rainy day fund. And then after you've got 3 months of your expenses put away, then as you accumulate money, you should start to think about where and how you invest that. I think for early stage investors, putting money in mutual funds makes the most sense. What a mutual fund is just an organization that takes and pools people's money together and then invests in stocks. And you can, there are a variety of different kinds of mutual funds that one can invest. When you get to a certain number, your number may be different than my number. My number was when I had $10,000 in a mutual fund, then I could start thinking about, because I had a professional manager with that $10,000, then I could pay a little bit more attention and start to put money in on my own. And while I have a financial advisor now, I invest most of the money that my wife and I have managed to accumulate. And the financial advisor is a good friend, and he and I compare our rates of return on an annual basis. He has beaten me twice in the last 18 years. So it really does, my risk tolerance is higher than his risk tolerance. And because my risk tolerance is higher, I have taken some risk he would not have taken. So you begin to grow, you begin to learn, you begin to make that sort of assessment as an investor. And you're going to have wins and you're going to have losses. That's why being in a mutual fund sort of insulates you early. And then as you have a little bit more accumulated, you take a few more risks. And then it's just a matter of how much risk you are concerned with having. I still am fully invested in the stock market. I don't own too many bonds. I don't own other sort of annuity contracts. There are a couple. But the reality is I think that the stock market offers the greatest possibility for returns over a lifetime. So I'll stop there.
That's perfect. We, of course, have a question from Bob Wynn, and he's asking you couldn't get away from that. He's asking, do you recommend any books for teens to read to become beginner investors?
There's one that I found on my daughter's bookshelf. I was cleaning out in preparation for her visit from New York, and she had a book called Investing Demystified. And it's a self-teaching guide. The author is Paul Lim, L-I-M. And I just sat down this afternoon and took a quick glance at it, and I was stunned to see notes in it that my daughter had written as she had actually read this thing. So she had, you know, reduced risk by diversification. Time determines the amount of risk taken. These are her notes from her having read this. Keep a tally of purchases, bills, and other charges. These are her notes. So she clearly got something out of the book.
repeat the author. You said Paul
Lim, L-I-M.
M.
And
it's okay.
Called Investing Demystified. And there are 1,000 books about investing. And, you know, there's, you know, the Investing for Dummies. You'd be surprised. People don't like the word dummies, but it actually is a very good book, Beginning Investing for Dummies.
Yeah, most of theirs are.
Yeah, so you can look. You can look in newspapers. You can look at Google Finance and Yahoo Finance. And then when you finally want to really learn more about a company, I strongly encourage people to learn to read and to look at annual reports and proxy statements. I think you'll learn a lot about what companies plan on doing, what they have done in an annual report. They have to file them every year. And the proxy statements, as well as the 10Q and the 10Ks, which are things that they quarterly and annual filing requirements that publicly traded companies have to file, you will find lots of information there. What I think that does is it tells you something about the people who are managing the company, tells you a lot about where the company sees itself going, and it gives you some really good numbers about what the company looks like. How many assets they have, how many liabilities they have, what their revenues are, what their sales are, what their expenses are. And then you can begin to see for yourself, is this a company I want to invest in?
Well, one of the books that I have to feature today is, and you could tell this is a library book, but it's called Start Late, Finish Rich, A
mm-hmm.
No-Fail Plan for Achieving Financial Freedom at Any Age by David Bach. Yes. So your question, your answer was for, I guess, the younger people. Mine is for the older people that want to get started and start kind of feeling a little type of way, because whenever we come into some great information later in life, we're like, why didn't anybody tell me this when I was younger? But as we all know, now is the best time. So, again, Start Late, Finish Rich by David Bach. I recommend that book. I believe that was the first David Bach book that my mother and I read. The second, no, it may have been, actually, it wasn't that book. It was Smart Women, Finish Rich was the first David Bach book we read together. And the second one was The Automatic Millionaire. And that was the
mm-hmm.
one where when I read it, I immediately knew, oh, you could set this up automatically to become a millionaire. One of the young ladies, a student that is in the stock market game, because she was late to come in, I actually had her to, as a part of the program, read the book and send me a chapter summary each week that she is reading a chapter. So she actually, I think, just finished the book, or at least she sent me all the summaries, so I'm assuming she finished reading it. But yeah, she's, I think, about 16, 18,
mm-hmm.
something in that range. And I think this summer she is going to be, I think maybe even have her first job selling Cutco knives. So as soon as I heard that, I was like, oh, well, you know, definitely read this book while you're going through this experience so that you can understand what's available to you. Because we all know, if you've been on this call or picked up anything from what Mr. Knight has said, the earlier you start, the less you have to put away and the more you'll end up with in the long term, because time is adding to your snowball effect. The one last analogy I wanted to use, because it's interesting, as a lawyer, you started at a bank. And one of the first examples that I usually use when somebody asks me to teach them about investing or explain investing to them, I'd say that you being an investor is basically cutting the middleman out, which
mm-hmm.
is the bank. Many people don't know how a bank works. But as soon as I realized how a bank works and the fact that they were using my deposit to loan out to other people at a higher rate of return, and they're giving me less than 1%, but they are making 15% on the loan, 18, 20% on the loan, or even investing in whether it be corporate bonds or even corporate stock. It's like, why? Once you have that knowledge, why? You know? Because the other illusion, too, is your money is safer, you know? I mean, up to a certain point, but how much of your money are you going to let sit where other people, I mean, I think the illusion is that it is sitting. It's not sitting.
No.
It's not. So just like they are making money off of your money sitting in a bank, you could be making that money by having it sitting a stop, because the bank is saying to you, hey, deposit with me, I'll give you 1%. Corporations say that all the time. It's called the dividend. Oh, buy my stock, I'll give you $2 in a dividend. I'll give you 50 cents in a dividend. But once I think we start to realize the consequences of our actions and really our decisions and treat them, you know, apples to apples, I think we can make better and more informed decisions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because now that you have the knowledge, you can actually make a better decision, and it's going to reap you so much more. You know, like you said, if the stock market is averaging 9% every year, but your bank account is only giving you less than 1% every year, and then inflation is probably 3% every year, you're losing.
Yeah, and the real key is you have to put money away. And this is, if I'm going to leave a message for everyone, is you can't spend all the pennies you make. And my rule is harsher than most. My rule is whatever you bring home, 20 cents of every dollar has to be put away. That's really hard to do when you don't bring home but $100 to say you're going to put $20 away. But, Ann, you said the power of $20. If I choose not to buy a latte for 4 days a week, I got my $20. And that's my $100. I put my $20 away. And if I put that $20 away, these days you can even buy fractional shares. I'm not a big fan of it, but you can buy fractional shares. So you could say, I've always wanted to own, pick a company. Now, most people will say, I've always wanted to own Amazon stock. At $3,000 a share, you probably are going to have a lot of money before you can buy a lot of Amazon stock. But you could buy a little piece in a mutual fund. You can buy a little piece even in a fractional share. Doesn't give you a lot, but it keeps you in the game. And if you consistently put that $20 out of every $100 away, when you make $500 and now you can put $100 away, and you make $5,000 and you can put $1,000 away, then you begin to see that you can accumulate enough that will allow you to buy that share of Amazon if that's what you thought you wanted to buy. So the younger you start, and this young woman that you mentioned, Ione, who is 16, if she's going to work this summer, that's the trick. For every dollar you make, put 20 cents of that dollar away. You can start in a bank, but by the end of the summer, you'll have a nice little nest egg, and then you decide, maybe I can even buy a mutual fund, because it doesn't take a lot to start.
Well, I think that's a perfect ending. Thank you so much for your time, Mr. Joe Knight. We really appreciate you sharing your knowledge and your experience and your story with us, and I'm sure everybody was able to learn at least one thing from you tonight.
Well, I'm sorry I ran my mouth so much, but, you know, as you can see, I'm excited about this.
We're actually ending early, so don't feel bad about it.
Okay.
No, and rightfully so, we do want to encourage everybody, go to betterinvesting.org. Actually, on their website, on the front page of the site, they still are hosting the 90-day free membership. So, Ione, if you could maybe put the Better Investing link. And Marshall, thank you so much. Teresa, thank you so much. If you could also put that on the Facebook page so our listeners, in the event they'd like to get more information, they can actually go to Better Investing on the website, and there's so much information there. We want to remind everybody that we are volunteers, Ione and I, and actually Ione is our vice president of our Southeast Florida chapter of Better Investing. And Better Investing is a not-for-profit organization formed in 1951 and has helped support over 5 million individual investors. And so we're excited to volunteer. We're excited to bring you this program on behalf of Financial Empowerment Group. We want to thank Dean Yeager and his wife, Vicki, who is very supportive of this investment education. Ione and I, again, we want to thank you for joining us. And if you have any questions or comments, please, you still have time to place them in the comment section. And if for any reason this program, which is live, if you hear about it later, you can still put comments in on the Facebook platform. And we will, you know, give us some time and we will respond. We want to encourage you in the fact that everybody has an investing story, and we are excited to share, but we're also excited to one day hear your story. So, Mr. Knight, thank you so very much. We appreciate hearing your story tonight, and we want to let everybody know we'll see you every Wednesday night here on this this wonderful platform.
All right, again. Thank you all.
All right, thank you.
Have a good evening.
Thank you, Bob Wynn, for sharing Mr. Knight with us. Thank you.
Goodbye.